Thank you. Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, June 26th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Vendors in Harare vowed to defy a state ultimatum expiring today, ordering them to leave illegal trading sites in Zimbabwe's cities and towns.
We are not going to comply with this deadline. It's a deadline by people who want to pretend to be ignorant of the situation on the ground. There are no jobs in this country.
Zimbabwe joined the rest of the world today in remembering victims of torture, with the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission saying it's unable to decisively deal with torture due to lack of appropriate legislation.
It becomes much easier to deal with crimes of torture if there is statutory provision that, you know, prohibits it.
And some Zimbabweans say local people should openly discuss calls for the revival of the Ndebele kingdom.
It is our contention that the Jameson line remains a fact, and that what is required is for the kingdom of Mtwagazi to be restored.
These stories and much, much more coming up right here on Studio 7.
Vendors in Harare have vowed to defy a state ultimatum expiring today, ordering them to leave illegal trading sites in Zimbabwe's cities and towns. National Vendors Union Zimbabwe Director Samuel Wadzai says they are not fazed by the local authorities' threats to remove them using municipal police and national law enforcement agents. Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni was not available for comment as he was not answering calls on his mobile phone. But Wadzai says they are ready to sacrifice their lives on the streets of Harare.
We are not complying with this deadline for clear reasons. I think we have stated our position that we believe that there are certain processes that the government and all its agencies should start to do at the moment before we even start to talk about the relocating vendors. Those processes have not been done. Not even a single process has commenced at this juncture. So we are not going to comply with this deadline. It's a deadline by people who want to pretend to be ignorant of the situation on the ground. There are no jobs in this country, and the Zimbabweans are struggling, and the vending has naturally become the alternative.
The council announced that it will use its police and the Zimbabwe Republic police to remove vendors. What are you going to do?
We don't believe that there is any need to bring in the police on this clear social economic issue. We are not a national threat. If anything, the economic situation at this moment is the most dangerous threat to this country.
That was National Vendors Union Zimbabwe Director Samuel Wadzai speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
In Bulawayo, meanwhile, hundreds of vendors led by pressure group Women of Zimbabwe Arise demonstrated in the city and handed over a petition to the city council. The Bulawayo Mayor Martin Moyo tells reporter Standemkile Mhlanga the local authority has requested an extension of today's deadline to enable them to fulfill all requisites needed for relocating the vendors.
It's not about removing them from the street. It's about getting order and sanity on the streets. I do not think there is a point in just going up the street and chasing everybody out of town. The spirit should be one of reorganizing the vendors so that there is sanity in the city, so that the congestion is minimized, and so that there are no people that violate other people's spaces.
How is the process going on?
We are still identifying and discussing what we think with the vendors and getting feedback from them also on what they think. After my meeting of Monday, the vendor representative met with our council planning officials as late as yesterday. And so this is something that is ongoing.
In other words, are you going to ask for an extension from the Minister of Local Government?
I have already written to the Minister requesting an extension.
And it was granted?
No, we have not received a response yet.
So in other words, today is business as usual for the vendors in Bulawayo?
Well, we have not chased them off the streets yet.
There is also an issue about water cards. Some illegal vendors argue that they use the proceeds from vending to pay such bills.
As far as we are concerned, the water cutting is a more humane way of dealing with defaulters. But if we went to court, that is really a very traumatic way of dealing with the issue.
That was Bulawayo Mayor Martin Moyo on the line with Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
Zimbabwe joined the rest of the world today in remembering victims of torture, with the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission saying it's unable to decisively deal with torture due to the absence of an enabling legislation. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Those are some victims of torture as they commemorated the United Nations International Day in support of victims of torture. Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission Chairman Elasto Mugwadi said, while the Constitution prohibits torture, there was no statute to that effect.
There has to be a specific statute that deals with that. And so you'll find if someone is accused of torture, normally determinations by the courts will tend to lean against the assault. Yes, ordinary or aggravated assault, which is not as serious as torture, which is dehumanizing.
He said the first step for Zimbabwe would be to ratify the United Nations Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment.
It becomes much easier to deal with crimes of torture if there is statutory provision that, you know, prohibits it.
Civic Education Network Trust Executive Director Wellington Bofana said the domestication of the UN Convention Against Torture will strengthen the operations of the Human Rights Commission as well as preventing cases of torture. Bofana said the absence of legislation is perpetuating torture in the country as most perpetrators go unpunished. He noted that government must also rehabilitate torture victims.
Wherever we had complaints and cases against officers, against individuals acting on behalf of the state who were accused of torture, then our appeal to the state is that they should investigate those cases and ensure that those responsible for it are either brought to book or are discharged of their duties.
Several victims of torture in Zimbabwe said they need compensation and support from government, but Mugwadi stressed that in the absence of legislation, it will be difficult to provide such support. Zimbabwe and Tanzania are among the 7 out of the 54 African countries who have not ratified and domesticated the UN Convention Against Torture. June 26th has been set aside by the United Nations as a day for remembering victims of torture and to find ways of eliminating such activities in all countries. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
A book narrating the history of the conquest of Matabeleland region by white colonialists has rekindled calls for the restoration of the collapsed Ndebele kingdom. Our correspondent Daurai Shaba has more details from Bulawayo.
Speaking to Studio 7 in Bulawayo yesterday after the launch of his book entitled The Rule by Conquest, The Struggle in Mtwakazi, veteran journalist Jonathan Mapenduka said the main purpose of his book is to show that a distinct Ndebele kingdom established by King Mzilikazi with all the attributes of a nation was in existence. Mapenduka said the white colonialists who vanquished the kingdom, also referred to as Mtwakazi, recognized that it had its own separate culture, adding that as a member of Umhlahlo Wesizwe Skam Mtwakazi, he advocates for the restoration of the kingdom.
It is our contention as Umhlahlo Wesizwe Skam Mtwakazi that the Jameson line remains a fact. and that what is required is for the kingdom of Mthwakazi to be restored.
The Umhlahlo Wesizwe Sika Mthwakazi is an organization that advocates for the preservation of the Ndebele culture and the re-establishment of the kingdom through peaceful means. Speaking at the book launch, guest of honor and former Wulilima lawmaker Moses Mzila Ndlovu said for a long time the Ndebele people have been treated like second-class citizens in Zimbabwe. Mzila Ndlovu praised Mapenduka for writing the book, saying it helps restore the dignity of the Ndebeles and raises important issues about what they ought to do in order to achieve self-determination.
We have accepted to be relegated to the lowest level of society, second class. This is what is being, you know, wrapped into your children. You come second. And that is why in political formations, you can only come second. No, very materially. This happens in our court. The issue is restoration.
In a recent review of the book, academic Samke Lehadebe criticized it for presenting suppositions and conjecture as facts, but commended it as a must-read for those concerned with human rights and justice. Hadebe said the book presents the strongest advocacy so far for the right to self-determination of the Ndebele people, concluding that Zimbabwe as a democratic country should face the issue and even put it to a vote. Researcher Butler Tambo of the Bulawayo-based Policy Research Institute of Zimbabwe said the country's new constitution has provisions for devolution which can help address the concerns of marginalization in the Matabeleland region.
I think we've over-concentrated on armchair critics, and these are generally small pockets of people who are within the diaspora sometimes who tend to talk about secessionism in the comfort of their ivory towers somewhere in some foreign capitals, not necessarily the person on the street of Bulawayo or the person on the rural Matabeleland side who is saying, maybe I am poor right now, and what can be done maybe by government, what can be done by other players to alleviate my status.
Tobias Guzura, a conflict management, peace and development studies lecturer with the Zimbabwe Open University, speaking as an independent analyst, said the issue of secession has precedence in Africa, citing Eritrea's breakaway from Ethiopia and that of South Sudan from Sudan as examples. But Guzura said there are many important considerations to be taken into account, including the availability of both human and natural resources before the establishment of an autonomous nation.
Yes, there might be gold deposits in Rwanda, in Hau mine, but are they enough compared to the ones that are on the other side of the Shangani River or the Mnyati River, depending on the boundary which they want to look at? So we are looking at the resource base might not be able to sustain a society.
Although there are views that secession could strain relations between ethnic groups and possibly lead to war, some people feel that in keeping with Zimbabwe's democratic principles, such as freedom of association and freedom of expression, this issue has to be discussed openly without fear or intimidation. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shaba.
Former Mwenezi East Member of Parliament Kudakwashe Basikiti has praised the Constitutional Court for barring President Robert Mugabe from declaring vacant his seat and proclaiming an election date for the constituency, disregarding a pending High Court case. Basikiti was expelled from ZANU-PF government and Parliament for allegedly backing a plot to allegedly oust President Mugabe. Basikiti and his alleged co-conspirators have dismissed the allegation as baseless. Yesterday, the full Constitutional Court bench agreed with Basikiti that his expulsion was improper as there was a pending case. The court ordered the High Court and Supreme Court to conclude the issue by July 31st. Basikiti had dragged President Mugabe, ZANU-PF and the Speaker of Parliament, Jacob Mdenda, to court. Basikiti tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the Concord decision is symbolic.
I'm very happy today that the courts have been able to return the people their power. The people's power have prevailed because the few individuals who had set to expel and try to create a by-election, the court ruled that there shall be no by-election in Mwenezi up until the case is finalized. What basically it meant was, we had requested the High Court to make a determination of the illegality of the expulsion, but those illegalities were glaringly exposed in the Constitutional Court. It's only that the judges could not pronounce it because we had not requested them to pronounce it, but we had requested that the High Court be made to sit quickly and pronounce that. So it was granted. Secondly, this ruling by the Concord will set freedom of expression in the members of parliament, and it will restore their relevance.
But, Mr. Baskit, are you confident that you will be able to get a favorable ruling from the High Court?
It will be just a question of formality, because the glaring facts are clear.
That was former Mwenezi East Member of Parliament Kudakwashi Baskiti speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Baskiti's lawyer, Tendai Biti, also hailed the Concord decision as very significant.
I think it's a very important ruling that the court has given.
Why would you say it's important?
Look, in a country like ours, the citizen needs to know that they can be protected by the law. And so today, Baskiti got that protection. And in a situation where you have got a ruling party and a government that is totally oblivious to the rule of law, citizens want to be ensured that the rule of law actually functions. So nobody knows what will happen in the High Court, but at least today, you know, a lot of people would have been happy that a citizen can have redress from the courts.
Parliament had actually booted out Mr. Baskiti despite his appeal to the High Court. So does this mean he is now a member of parliament again?
No, no, no. What happened was that Baskiti filed his court application for review, in other words, the application to set aside ZANU-PF's unlawful actions, on the 8th of June. On the 9th of June, he then filed an urgent application to prevent the speaker from doing anything until Baskiti's matter had been met.
That was Kudakwashi Baskiti's lawyer, Tendai Biti, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Blessing also reached Mr. Mugabe's lawyer, Terence Hussein.
The court made its ruling. We accept its ruling. What they indicated is that they were going to grant some of the relief, but not all of it. You remember they had wanted to stop the president from issuing a proclamation. The court rejected this. They also wanted a declaration to say that Mr. Baskiti's constitutional rights were infringed. They rejected this. But what they did grant was that the High Court application that's pending in review may go ahead, and that whilst it is going ahead, the election must not take place. The Constitutional Court, however, gave a deadline for this of 31st July. So everything in the High Court must be finished by 31st July. But in the meantime, the president is clearly authorized to proceed with the proclamation. So you will see him declare the election, but it won't take place before the 31st of July.
But are you confident that you will win in the High Court?
Law isn't a game of gambling where you win or lose, and you can never predict that. But let me put it this way. I think we have done our homework. We are ready to fight. And I think we're very positive. We are very positive of a positive and fair outcome.
That was President Robert Mugabe's lawyer, Terence Hussein, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
United States Ambassador Wharton and political analyst Ibu Mandaza talk about Zimbabwe's steel-sensitive land question.
And the big game is on this weekend in the Premier Soccer League, Highlanders versus Dynamos.
Stay tuned for more details to come.
First, though, we take a look at regional and international news.
President Barack Obama is hailed as a victory for America, the U.S. Supreme Court ruling Friday that same-sex couples have the right to marry anywhere in the United States. The court ruled 5-4 that the U.S. Constitution's guarantees of due process and equal protection for all overrule any state's attempt to outlaw same-sex marriages. Currently, gay and lesbian couples are able to marry in 36 states, and in the nation's capital city. This ruling will extend those marriage rights to all 50 states.
This decision will end the patchwork system we currently have. It will end the uncertainty hundreds of thousands of same-sex couples face from not knowing whether their marriage, legitimate in the eyes of one state, will remain if they decide to move or even visit another. This ruling will strengthen all of our communities by offering to all loving same-sex couples the dignity of marriage across this great land. I know that Americans of goodwill continue to hold a wide range of views on this issue. Opposition in some cases has been based on sincere and deeply held beliefs. All of us who welcome today's news should be mindful of that fact. But today should also give us hope that on the many issues with which we grapple, often painfully, real change is possible. There's so much more work to be done to extend the full promise of America to every American. But today we can say, in no uncertain terms, that we've made our union a little more perfect.
That was U.S. President Barack Obama.
Tunisian officials say a terrorist attack near a hotel along the Mediterranean coast has left 28 people dead, including British, German, and Belgian nationals.
One person was found decapitated and one person was arrested after a terrorist attack on a gas plant in southern France.
And Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab killed more than 70 African Union soldiers and seized control of their military base in southern Somalia today.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
As part of the Lancaster House Agreement that led to a ceasefire in the then Rhodesia in 1979, Britain offered compensation for white farmers in an effort to equitably distribute land between black subsistence farmers and whites. The question, however, that has been surfacing in conversations on the country's land issue is what was also offered by the United States. That question was posed by academic and SAPES Trust Chairman Ibo Mandaza in his contribution to a panel discussion on the challenges of democratization and economic recovery in Zimbabwe that was held in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday.
We'd like to put on the table that a land reform fund. The Lancaster House, I remember I came here with Zingambi Tumbuka during Lancaster House when the talks had broken down. And met with Andrew Young, who was ambassador of the UN at that time. And the Americans made a commitment of $1 billion. Andrew Young was in Harare last year to confirm that position. It'd be good to see Bruce, through your good offices, to get some kind of commitment towards a land reform fund, not compensation, land reform, of which compensation is only one element. It means mainly to revive agriculture. The land reform exercise, the impact thereof, there was bound to be chaos, there was bound to be instability, but it has taken much longer to overcome those problems, given the nature of the developments in the last 15 years. But I think it's something that we should put on the table, and business in particular, that a land reform fund be instituted for Zimbabwe.
That was academic and SAPES Trust Chairman Ibo Mandaza. In response, U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton, who was also a panelist, said the United States did offer to help Zimbabwe, but the money was not for compensating white farmers.
On the issue of land reform, I think that a land audit is very important. I think that land reform was necessary in 1980, it was necessary in 2000, it's necessary today. The way in which it was pursued ended up being terribly destructive to the Zimbabwean economy and to confidence. The United States did make a commitment at Lancaster House in November of 1979. I've taken a hard look at this question because this is a sort of a persistent question. My best belief, my best understanding is that our commitment was to support the development of Zimbabwe. $1 billion is not a bad figure. We've provided $2.6 billion to date since independence, not for land specifically, but for health, for economic development, for housing, for a whole range of development issues. I know the person who was there at Lancaster House and who had a conversation with the Zimbabwean leaders about the fungibility of money. Frankly, the idea that the American government would commit U.S. taxpayer dollars to pay off British or Rhodesian farmers for their land strikes me as a little bit implausible. So I'm much more comfortable with the idea that we committed to the larger issue of development in Zimbabwe. And specifically, I know that the word fungibility of money was used in that conversation to make clear to the Zimbabwean leaders that if we were able to pick up some of the public needs on health and education, that would free up money for land reform.
And that was U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Bruce Wharton. You are speaking in a panel discussion on Zimbabwe here in the United States. We also reached a Liberation War veteran, Rugare Gumbo, a former ZANU-PF spokesman who says the U.S. did promise to fund the land reforms.
But our understanding, sorry, I think, Dilipa interview, eh? Okay. Dilipa interview. Sorry, Nkona.
Yeah, Nkona.
Hello?
Yes, Nkona.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah, let's...
And in our sports segment, the Castellaga Premier Soccer League action returns after a two-week break with mouth-watering clashes on the cards. Reporter Michael Cariati tells us more.
Topping the entertainment bill is the so-called Battle for Zimbabwe clash between two of the most popular football teams in the country, Dynamos and Highlanders at Rufaro Stadium on Sunday. Matches between the two sides are considered among the biggest in African football, and thousands of people are expected to watch the match at Rufaro. Highlanders have not beaten Dynamos in the past 8 years, but both Highlanders coach Bongani Mafu and Chief Executive Officer Ndumiso Gumede have promised that Dynamos' honeymoon is over. Football fan Farai Kambamura says Highlanders will come out guns blazing after enduring 8 years of frustration.
Highlanders, actually, they've got a point to prove because for the past 8 years they haven't beaten Dynamos. I think they will come out with all guns blazing.
Even Caps United supporter Mishek Chisaga believes Highlanders will win the game.
Dynamos can rise to the occasion, but I really am putting my money on Highlanders.
However, former Caps United Triangle and Shooting Stars coach Gishon Ntini has a somewhat different opinion. Ntini says although the game will be tight, Dimbare will eventually come out victors.
Yeah, it's going to be very tough to predict, but I think Dynamos will win this one.
Matches between Dynamos and Highlanders have a well-known documented history of violence, but Chisaga says football fans should accept the results of the game.
There are three results. You either draw, you lose, or you win.
The Zimbabwe National Soccer Supporters member says people should be free to bring to stadiums members of their own families.
We should not be afraid to bring kids. Even a granny should be allowed to be at the stadium. It should be a family affair. Whoever wins, that's the end of the day.
While Dynamos and Highlanders entertain each other at Rufaro Stadium, league leaders Chicken Inn have a somewhat easy assignment against bottom place Dongo Sawmills at Luveve Stadium tomorrow. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts Blessing Zulu and Gibbs Dube will be talking with listeners and experts about government's attempts to remove vendors from the city's centers in Zimbabwe.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Vendors in Harare have vowed to defy a state ultimatum expiring today, ordering them to leave illegal trading sites in Zimbabwe's cities and towns.
Zimbabwe joined the rest of the world today in remembering victims of torture, with the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission saying it is unable to decisively deal with torture issues.
That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Stand by for Ntunga Milinkomo. Good night.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.